Next case is, let's see, Wad and Lafat versus Alberto Gonzalez. We have Mr. Cox.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Theodore Cox, for Mr. Dawood and his wife. This is my first occasion appearing in the Seventh Circuit, and it's an honor to be here. This is not, however, the kind of court that Mr. Dawood faces in the emergency court in Egypt if he is returned there, a court of no record, no tape recorder, no attorney allowed, and no right to self-defense. The emergency courts, I would call it a court of anarchy rather than, if you can even use the word court at all, and it's substantively, because that's what it is substantively, if I can explain explain why. It's whatever the panel is of persons who are empowered to impose a punishment, in this case 5 years of imprisonment, based on their own particular animus, passion, whim, unreviewable judgment as to what should happen to a person they don't like. And it is a court of no record. There is no document created by the court. Their word, their you know, intention in their mind or whatever is directly carried out, and this is what the government set up in the so-called its fight against terrorism. So while the background information shows a very intense conflict between the government and Islamic fundamentalists in Egypt. On the one hand, some Coptics are killed. On the other hand, they have a church that they can go to. The background doesn't properly analyze what this kind of emergency court is in the context of Mr. Dawood's fear of going back.
It sounds to me, from the gist of what you're saying, that you're really emphasizing future persecution, risk of future persecution, as opposed to past. Is that correct, or are you?
What I've just said, it goes to future persecution.
Right.
Yes.
So
but
we
have not. We're not waiving there. We still allege a past persecution. It's more, I argue that it is, the detention for, I believe, a month and the beatings is persecution. Some courts say a short detention and some beating is not persecution. It's not as, the harm to him, I think, is, in fact, based on the future persecution, although we assert that what happened to him already was persecution. Here's the wedding tape.
Of course, you've got a presumption. Oh, you have the tape.
Here's the tape. We all want it. It was in front of the IJ. I was speaking to counsel. We thought we would act it out for you if the court permitted. But
no, I don't think so.
You don't have enough time, I'm afraid.
But this is part of the evidence the IJ had in front of him, which was offered and not considered, as well as the testimony of the wife, who was there as a witness and not invited to testify.
Is this video and the showing of it distinguish these people for fear of future persecution from other Coptics, the 10% of the
yes.
population?
So well, these, yes.
So
I think Coptics...
This has to be a unique situation, and not just because they're Coptics.
It's a Coptic who has been charged by the emergency court and who was sought for prosecution by the emergency court. That's not all 10% of Coptics are in that category. Certainly... There are many types of Coptic asylum claims which involve other types of things happening in the society, and most of them are granted. But this case involves this wedding tape, which was shown on TV, and the response of the local jihadi type Muslims who are very active, as we all know, in Egyptian society. I don't think that the background.
What influence do they have over the police? These I guess you'd call them fundamentalists or whatever, do they report and then the police carry things out?
That's what they did in this case.
Right.
That's not the background. Is not, and I'm not suggesting either that every emergency court is a function of the police or represents a collaboration of the fundamentalist Islam groups and the police in the whole country. The court was set up to fight the people who assassinated Sadat in 1980 or something like that. But this panel of this emergency court is controlled in league with the local police in this case. It's not, and it's a court of no record, so there's no way to that if you have a panel that wants to get this guy, they can do it, and the government of Egypt allows it. Other emergency courts, I assume, go after other types of people that the government is interested in and persecuting or imposing some punishment on.
The State Department reports do focus on the discrimination against the cops, the Copt sect.
Yes.
And the role of the, because we need the state connection, the role of the security services, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, the Muslim is the official religion by law in Egypt, and an offense to Muslim would offend both the established religion of the state and really offend the Islamic fundamentalists who we've been just seen recently demonstrating all over the world on reports of Quran abuse. I mean, that if someone believes there is a fetna is the word I think in the wife's affidavit, an offense to Islam, there's really no limits to what the Islamic fundamentalists will do to you. And in this case, this court, so-called court, has summoned him to come for whatever procedure you can call it, and the expert said that if you come before that court, then it is certain he'll get 5 years in jail. That's what the expert testimony in this case said. He was found credible the adverse credibility finding was reversed by the board, on issues of corroboration. And we know the Real ID is very keen on corroboration now. But I would say that the record of what kind of a court this is would any reasonable track finder, let's even take Real ID, which we must, as we know. The record does not support an argument or a suggestion that there is a summons, a warrant, a transcript, a document to corroborate what happens or his being called to this court. So I that's the key error in terms of corroboration.
Counsel, if I could interrupt at this
yeah.
point. All of your argument up to this point has addressed the underlying merits.
That's right.
And in this case, as I understand it, as in several of our cases this morning, we have a petition for review from a denial of a motion for reconsideration. Is that not the case?
That's not the case. This case is both a direct review on the underlying merits, and there was a motion to reconsider, and there was a motion to reopen, and it's all preserved by review of all of those motions.
You appealed the original decision?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. There is no... So we would argue on the original appeal that substantial evidence would require reversal in this case. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve my time.
Okay, fine. Yes. Ms. Limmer?
May it please the Court, Andrea Limmer for the Attorney General. With all due respect to my co-counsel, it is true that the board's underlying decision was appealed, but it is also true, Judge Sykes, as you point out, that there wasn't a scintilla of argument in the petitioner's brief about the underlying merits of this case. In fact, the brief expressly states at page 4 that they seek review only of the May 24th order of the board, which is the denial of the motions for reopening and reconsideration. And it is this decision that Mr. Dawood and Ms. Refat appeal to this court. And the statement of jurisdiction as well limits review to the board's order denying petitioners two motions to reopen their asylum case. They did not advance any argument challenging the IJ's decision or the board's January 6th order in their briefs, and thus, under this court's decisions in Draganova and Hughes, those issues have been waived. And at the risk of being deja vu all over again, review of refusals to reopen and reconsider are subject to a highly deferential abuse of discretion standard, and this certainly is not the case where discretion was abused in denying reopening.
Well, but here, though, we do have an odd case. We have one of the worst IJ opinions I've seen in a long time in terms of the IJ sort of chatting on about, and the board criticized him for it. The board
absolutely
knew it was,
and
a
so
terrible underlying decision. To see the board going out of its way to disavow is, and so the board then
but
writes this
the
thing saying that, yeah, sure, so we have the board's decision, but the board thinks that it has relied on the Department of State country report, but apparently it actually hasn't read the report, because the report strongly corroborates the petition here for review. So, you know, I guess you can say you've read something, but it really is an odd situation, particularly since the board also thinks that it's going to refuse. We will not defer to the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding because it's based on impermissible conjecture, unsubstantiated by the record. It's a really strange case.
So what the board said, Your Honor, was
that... I was just
that
reading it directly, so...
Was that Dawood's testimony was not... was credible in that it was internally consistent.
But don't stop there. The lead respondent's testimony was credible in that it was internally consistent, comma, consistent with the written declarations, comma, and not inherently improbable, period. See matter of SMJ. So
but
they say all of these things.
But the board, the State Department country report absolutely supports, as does Dawood's own testimony at trial and that of his expert witness, the only issue presented on appeal is whether the board erred in holding that that conditions in Egypt were improving. And Dawood himself
said... But why is that legally relevant? Suppose you said the conditions in Afghanistan are improving, but a particular applicant came and showed that he had been tortured by government officials in a part of the country under the control of the Taliban and moving to a different part of the country, et cetera, et cetera. These are individual cases. This isn't some generic, oh, you know, things are getting better.
All right, I have two responses, Your Honor. First, we have to decide whether we are looking at the underlying merits of this case or whether we are looking at the reconsideration and reopening motion.
True enough, but I would also say that I don't understand you to be arguing that all we do is rubber stamp motions
absolutely
to reconsider, because there's a huge amount of time being wasted this morning, if that's true.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. What the substance of Dawood's testimony, if you want to get to the underlying merits, before the IJ, was that he was detained by these Islamic fundamentalists, and then he was subsequently arrested by the emergency police based on reports by these same Islamic fundamentalists. And what the board concluded was that although his testimony was internally consistent, there's nothing in the background, and this is absolutely true if you read cover to cover in any of the State Department country reports, that the statement that the emergency courts or that the national police in Egypt would be persecuting the average Coptic Christian. This is not a recent convert. These are people who were baptized at birth, who were practicing their religion happily up until this event.
But he's not an average Coptic Christian in that he allowed himself to be made public through the televising of the wedding video. Obviously, a decision I assume he regrets in retrospect. But you know, sometimes they'll stamp down on people who stand out and they leave people alone who quietly go about their life and don't get on TV.
Well, there's nothing in the record to support any of this, to corroborate any of this. And under the Real ID Act now, on judicial review, if the board finds that the petitioner should have presented corroborating evidence, notwithstanding the fact that his testimony may have been credible, then those decisions are subject to the same standard of judicial review. The record must compel a finding.
But see, this is a weird thing for us here, because it sounds like we shouldn't reverse the determination made by the board to believe Mr. Daoud unless we find that a reasonable trier of fact would have been compelled to do something different. The statute's written, interestingly, in a way that assumes everybody's incredible. But it's a strange circumstance here, I think.
I think in a certain sense it's really just confirming what most of the circuits, including this one, have said about credibility findings and substantial evidence and deference to the board's factual findings, and compelling a different result is the standard in
these immigration
cases.
Right, but we don't usually that's when the board has said we don't believe X. When the board has said X testified credibly, the government isn't usually here telling us that we should disregard what the board did. That would be rather unseemly, given the usual position of deference. It's a different kind of opinion that we have to review.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I think that's true in these cases, that they are unusual cases. But once again, if the court wants to look to the underlying merits, compare what was in the Marshall affidavits, compare what was in the country report, it will see no evidence that the government is taking this kind of action and acting in cahoots with Islamic fundamentalists that Daoud admitted in his own testimony at trial that the government is cracking down on these people because they target government officials as well as religious minorities. And it's unlikely that the government would be acting on reports by them to detain the average Coptic Christian. Daoud didn't present any evidence that the police are waiting for him when he returns, that they're going to arrest him. All of this is speculative testimony in the record that was never corroborated. No evidence has ever been offered to this day. No doctor's reports of any injuries or any trauma that he sustained as a result of these beatings that he's claimed or these detentions. So whether the court wants to look to the underlying merits or to simply look at the higher standard of review, which is the abuse of discretion in denying reopening or reconsideration, I submit that there's nothing in this record that would counsel a reversal of the board's decision in this case. I don't know if you have any more specific questions of me. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Cox.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah, I would just reiterate that the board's decision is inherently incomprehensible.
But did you waive the appeal of the underlying board decision, as the government points out? Looking at your brief, it certainly seems that the questions you present have to do with reopening and reconsideration.
Well, to the extent that reconsideration and reopening argue the issues of the incorrect issues of errors of fact and law and present new and previously unavailable evidence, then that saves the original. Those are the issues of the case in chief anyway. I mean, the motions address the requirements of motions and not simply restate your claim for relief, and they do address.
Counsel, that's not a direct attack on the underlying merits. That's a bootstrapping argument.
Yeah, it is a bootstrapping argument. I am strapping my boot as we speak. It does look like our brief mostly addressed motions as opposed to the underlying merits. Although we did file a petition for review of the case.
But that's the whole question. Did you in doing this way? Did you also add on an extra burden for your appeal by putting this higher standard of review as opposed to the direct review where the merits as written?
Well, you know, if it's not in my brief, then it's not there. I can't make it up right now. If it's I would argue that The brief does seem to be addressed mainly to the second petition as opposed to the main main.
Well, you see what you're saying, though, that by capsulizing everything in a motion to reconsider, for example, it does capsulize. It makes it harder to overturn.
Well, if it's
as opposed to a direct review of whatever the underlying merits or demerits of the decision.
Yes, if the motion doesn't address the legal requirements of a motion, then of course it would not meet that standard. But in this case, it does meet that standard because it does argue the facts and law that were in error and present new and previously unavailable evidence on the reopening, and including Lozada complaint against the prior attorney for not including evidence. So at least I don't think that the board's and the board's decision on the motions were just saying we like our old decision. I mean, it didn't spend a lot of time analyzing anything that was presented to it, and just said nothing moves us to alter our decision. And I think that is an error.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks much. The case will be taken under advisement.